All right, so...
I'm eating ice cream right now.
You should be. And so this is the Truth or Dare interview.
Truth or Dare.
Yeah, and you have a choice as how you want to frame it.
Okay.
And you can take the discussion anywhere you want, and I can also give you a prompt. But it's past, present, and future, or regrets, current status, and dreams.
Past, present, and future, current status, regrets, and dreams.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about dreams. I think that that's... Because I don't really believe in the future. So I don't really...
So you don't think about what's to come? You're in the moment?
I don't think anything could happen. Like, there's no such thing as the future. It's sort of, well, like you plan, like, you know, the sun will probably come up tomorrow and, you know, I have to pay my gas bill, you know, that kind of thing. But I was never... I don't really have a concept of the future. Like, I don't think about, like, oh, 30 years from now, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Because there might not be a planet 30 years. Like, yeah, I don't really think about that stuff. So, and in my work, I don't really think about... it's taken me a while to be able to make whatever I want to make. Like, I feel like I should be making a certain kind of thing. And I don't think, oh, I'm going to make that next. I just make it now. Yeah. Like, I just... Yeah.
So you don't have this sort of progression. I feel like a lot of artists, especially the students I deal with, but also other artists, they think about this thing that they eventually want to make, but they feel like they have to make this other stuff in between.
I understand. Like, I understand how that is. Like, I remember reading this story about Gregory Gillespie, the like hyper-realist sort of hypnotic realist painter, and he had all these like really expensive brushes in his studio. And someone asked him, like, well, why aren't you using those brushes? And he said, well, those are for when I get good. It's like, well, dude, like, you're amazing. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, what's it going to be when you actually get good, you know? So,
well, along those lines, when did you... This is something that's interesting to me, because it's that idea of giving things up and not feeling like it has to be a certain way before it can be. You know, just seeing it through and just making on impulse. I mean, when did you get to that point where you felt like you were making on impulse or going for it when you wanted to?
When we first met, I was like, I was still like mourning my mother, right? And I was really sort of insane. I was making sort of those crazy hypnotic color paintings and stuff like that, which I still make. And then I had, after that, I had my first show at Samson, and I showed some of the work that I had made when I was down in Savannah with you guys. That was Rapture. And then when I was getting ready for the next show at Samson, I was talking to Camilo Alvarez over at Samson. And it was like in 2009? No, 2010 I had that show at Samson. End of 2010, right? No, end of 2011, I'm sorry. So I have the show, right? I'm just hanging out, we're just having lunch, and Camilo says, so when do you want to have another solo show at Samson? And I said, I don't know, like 2013, 2014, I'm not really in any hurry. He goes, that's great. You're having a show this year, just so you know. And I thought, holy shit, I hadn't ever really thought about having a show. And I had lots of work in the studio, but I started thinking about what kind of work I wanted to see. Not what kind of work other people wanted to see, what kind of work I wanted to see. And that was like a huge turning point for me, because I thought, I don't want to walk into Samson and hang 25 paintings 50 inches on center and have that be it. I thought, if I'm going to have a solo show, I want to make a certain kind of statement about painting. Not just about my work, but about painting. And I thought, I really don't care what anyone thinks. That was like the first time when I was prepping for the Samson show. I just did not. I thought, well, people are going to like it. They're going to hate it or whatever. But I really don't care.
And this was last year's show.
This was the show that the last, You Don't Deserve Me. Yeah. Was the show that was up at Samson. So that was last year. Yeah. So it's taken me a while. Like, I haven't really been, I'm not like an unconfident person. Yeah. That's not it. But like in terms of my work, I was less interested in... Yeah, it was May to July 2012.
Yeah.
In terms of my work, it was just, you know, showing at a place that has a lot of really great artists and saying to yourself, well, what am I adding to this? What am I adding to the discussion that is coming up here and the discussion that's happening around art in general and painting specifically and portraiture and masculinity and all the stuff I'm interested in? But, like, what am I adding to that? Because I sort of felt like it could have just been, it could have been boring,
yeah,
to be honest.
Well, along those lines, that's that whole idea, is that a conversation you're having, you were doing paintings, you did the neon. Was that the first time you did it, when you did it down in Savannah with the...
I did the mock-up for it in Savannah.
Okay.
I couldn't get it funded, but I did the... That was the first neon I made, yeah.
So you had the neon, and also now what you're doing are the paintings as sculptures.
Mm-hmm.
So you have different modes, and is that something you were interested in doing as far as expanding the way your work was seen, or the way it dealt with space? You know, it seems like there's a lot of dialogue now in terms of painting, in terms of how it works spatially within an area. But after going to the Garden Museum today,
right,
I have always contended that it always has been part of it. And
absolutely,
I always think of painting as when you get a painting and you bring it home, it then intercedes on that space.
Mm-hmm.
And you exist with that piece.
Absolutely.
And it already had that relational positioning. So...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think there's anything unusual about that, but I also think that that's a big part of dialogue and painting, as far as people being able to either rationalize and justify it, which I've never felt is an important thing for me. So I don't know what I'm asking here, but...
Well, I think that people think that painting is somehow, ooh, the painting's an object.
Yeah.
Like, that's a new thing.
Yeah.
Or that the painting, I'm making paintings that are responsive to architecture. Right. Like, there used to be these things called frames that were like molding, and the molding was the same as the molding. And so it's like, I say to people, I give this talk at this show I was in, Paint Things, which sort of takes on this dialogue that you're talking about. I'm looking for the catalog now, because I have one for you. Oh, well, it's on the table. But when I went and I gave a public talk about that show, I said, you know, there was a time in America specifically, and, you know, in France and also in England, you know, when every object in your home would have been painted. Like, the notion of having, like, bare wood in your house was, like, it was disgusting. It was, like, cover that, you know? And there was, like, wallpaper. There was wall painting, stenciling, pochoir, all that sort of stuff. So the notion that you would hang a painting on a bare white wall is a modernist thing. It's not... So the idea of a paint thing, a house was a painted thing, and furniture was painted things, and furniture with a picture on it. So to me, it's like a return to that. It's less like a new thing. It's much more like understanding that there's no separation in between the painted thing and its environment. The painted thing is part of the environment. So when I started making the paintings freestanding, I thought about how you could put these things in space, but also, I don't want to say that I was thinking about sculpture, because I really, really wasn't, to be honest, if I'm really honest. I was thinking about the painting being a thing in the room, like a sign.
Yeah.
Something that you had to negotiate, or something that might convey information or something, but not really in terms of the dialogue that comes up around sculpture. Like, you know, we approach things like this all the time. You're walking through a museum and there's a sign that says, you know, restroom is this way, or no flash photography. And it's a freestanding thing in the space. And everyone approaches those things the same way, some sort of conveyor of information. And then when you're no longer engaged with them, you forget about them. And that, to me, is the space of painting.
Well, and along those lines, and looking at your pieces that are more sculptural, even though...
Mm-hmm.
You're saying they're not sculptural necessarily, but...
No, they
are
sculptural.
Three-dimensional,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah.
You place them at different angles, different locations,
right,
different orientation to the viewer. So
mm-hmm.
What kind of experience are you looking for the viewer to have with them?
You know, we interact with these things every day, like a keep off the grass sign, like a music stand, or some sort of informational screen, or, you know, when I was a kid... They used to have docents walk through the museums with big signs so you could find them wherever you are. Shower heads. Like, all these different things that we're in relationship with all the time. Those seem like fair game to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think the having them on the poles or having them assembled to me, I wanted that metaphor of plumbing. Like there was something going through these conduits. But beyond that, I wasn't really thinking about sculpture per se. I was much more thinking about connecting the painting to the planet in some way.
Yeah.
Like in some of the earlier drawings for this work, there's all these weird lines. It'll be like a floating head and then a line down to the bottom of the page. And I thought, well, how am I going to make that? Like, how do I... I can't just have paint in midair. It has to have a support. Mm-hmm. So once the support became separate from the painting, and then the painting could be attached to the support, which is the nature of painting anyway. Yeah. Painting is always attached to some sort of support. It just became easy. And then the poles became a way of drawing in space, of moving line and color through space in three dimensions.
So the paintings themselves are all portraits.
Mm-hmm.
So again, another, in a way, traditional motif.
Yeah.
So it directly relates historically to painting, and in many ways one of the most important functions of painting for a while for
mm-hmm.
a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
until photography, or some people argue.
Right.
So for you, when did you start with the portraits, and can you talk about the specific imagery?
It never really occurred to me to paint anything other than people. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that's what painting was. And when I was a kid and I wanted to, thinking about a career as an artist, I thought, well, you know, I could be a portrait painter. I thought that, but you know, who wants to paint portraits? Because number one, there's photography. And number two, like, if you really make a painting of someone, there's this negotiation between likeness and the painting. This negotiation that has to happen. And some people, like, rely on the likeness for, you know, to convince the viewer, and then allow the rest of the painting to have, like, some sort of painterly flourish or something like that. And it just wasn't interesting to me. I got more and more interested in painting these heads and less interested in painting people. And some of these original paintings, they're based on photographs of people. Like, so I would have friends either sit for me or send me a photo of them sticking out their tongues and stuff like that. And then as the paintings got more grotesque and more somewhat violent, and my idea, I thought, I really don't want to do this to anybody I know. So I started painting out of my head. I started really imagining what these heads would look like. And I mean, I get the castration thing. I get the decapitation thing and the emasculation thing a lot. And I think that all that stuff is true. I think it's all there. I'm not saying it's not. I do think that the work for me has a little touch of nightmare in it, a little, even though kids look at them and they think they're really funny, they stick their tongues out at the paintings, which I think is really just hilarious, but there's also something really sinister, like a head on a stick.
Yeah. Well, and with the addition of the pipes,
right,
that starts to play out more.
Yeah. So I'm interested in that. I mean, people tell me I'm really angry. I think that I am. I really wouldn't deny that. So there's something in the titles of the shows, like the Samson show is called You Don't Deserve Me. This show is called There's No One Left to Blame. So a lot of it is about getting even, settling scores emotionally or stuff like that.
So how much is the upcoming show sort of a continuation? Is it a continuation in your mind?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I made all new work for the ICA show because I didn't want to show the same work twice.
Yeah.
Because I felt like, again, it's that larger arena, and the ante is raised. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, this guy had this show, and he had these really great paintings, and now he's going to have a museum show, and we're going to see some of those paintings and a couple of new ones. And I thought, I don't want to show any of the paintings that have been seen before. I want it all to be new, and all to be forced to invent new forms and not rely on what had been successful before. So some of the things like the legs, the feet are new in the work. Also the way that things touch the ground, or the illusion between what's the bottom of something and what's the end of something, like really playing with those sorts of things. And also playing with ideas about scale and in relationship. Because now I'm starting to make these paintings that actually go together. So there's two freestanding paintings that are in conversation with each other. So that is a really new thing.
So do you think that show at Samson really help sort of inform how you want to push the sculptural elements.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that the great thing about having a show up is you get to go look at your work and see what it does. And that has been... And then we did this great thing at Samson where we rehung the show after it had been up for like 6 months. I mean, after it had been up for like 7 weeks or so, 8 weeks. We just went in and rehung the entire show. And it was great because people came in and they were like, wait, is this new work?
Totally disorienting.
Yeah. And it was the same work, but it just, it functioned in a completely different way. And it really was a instructive to me that the relationships that happen among the work are just, can be just as loaded as the work itself. So.
Well, that's an interesting thing because that's something I'm really ever playing with, the idea of like making the work and not having this preordained plan of how the work is going to operate,
right,
and seeing what it does in a space.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you're interested in?
Well, you know, I am not... I really have lucked out with some of the people I get to work with, because I just... I make the work and I give them the work to install or them to do the
placements.
Yeah,
that's a nice option as well, I think.
Because I feel like I'm not... That's not my distinct competence. And I think... I'm not like Wolfgang Tillmans, who's amazing with installation. That's never been my skill set. As you can see, by the way, the organization of my home, I'm not like a really someone who's very interested in installation, but
I think it's a pretty interesting installation.
Well, okay, that's very sweet of you, thank you. Interesting is like code for bizarre, but like with the show at Samson, Camilo said nothing on the wall. We're going to have one painting on the wall, that's it. And everything else is going to be on the floor, which, you know, when you come into a quote-unquote a Steve Block show, who's a portrait painter,
yeah,
you know, you're expecting to see a certain thing, and it's not that. That's not what you see at all. So that was exciting for me, and allowing him to make that decision and saying, you know, his space, he knows what people are thinking about. I can relinquish some sort of control over how this is presented, because I know he's not going to do anything that makes me look bad.
So what are you going to do for the ICA show? As far as decisions.
I don't really know. I think that, you know, Helen is brilliant, so I'm not really going to, like, what am I going to say? No, Helen, that piece has to go in. Like, no,
yeah, yeah.
She knows what she should. She's already picked the work, so she knows what she wants to show. I think the goal for me is to listen and to have a sort of idea about relinquishing some of it. Because, I mean, for me, I mean, as a painter, you know this. You're painting on a painting, and then all of a sudden, it's done.
Yeah.
And then you really have nothing to do with it anymore. It's just, it is what it is, and it asserts itself as this thing that's independent of you. So the great thing about working with you're giving all these independent entities to someone else to work with. So, like, they're very successful on their own as paintings. The great thing about letting someone else install them is that I get to be the viewer of them.
And have you always felt that way about it, or when you first started? Or
with some of the smaller installations, with some of the groupings of paintings I did on the wall,
mm-hmm,
that was a much more controlled thing.
Yeah.
Because it had more to do with the history of like altarpiece painting and wall painting. So that arrangement was very specific in my head. And paintings were painted in that arrangement. Now that these things occupy space, in a way, like they don't work the same way the wall works do. And I think that there's an interesting moment where you put a painting on the wall and put another painting in front of it. That's really a powerful thing. And so the smaller installations, the arrangements of paintings, I still feel a certain affinity for, of doing things like that. And also, you know, it's not a leap from the Photoshop world of arranging those paintings to scale to putting them on the wall, you know. And I've been doing that for a while, and then other people were showing those groupings of paintings, so I had to arrange them on the computer and send them out. So I sort of... And it's also a two-dimensional thing. It's a flat thing. Yeah. What's different in space is, like, those sorts of... I'm still learning about the way my work alters space. You know, like, sometimes, you know, you figure you put a sign up, and that whole plane that the sign on becomes a wall.
I
didn't realize that until the Samson show. Like, they would not go around certain ways. It's like, oh, because it's the implication of the wall is there. That's what stops people.
So can you talk a little bit about your use of color? I mean, you make these portraits and put them on these platforms that have you know, there's a lot of, sometimes there's texture, sometimes there's pattern, and then you also play with that color behind the space. So mm-hmm. do you want to talk a little bit about that?
You know, I saw the Rauschenberg retrospective, the Walter Hopps one that was at the the Guggenheim years ago, and I saw the early Egyptians, which, you know, he's got these things that are wrapped and covered with kaolin clay or plaster or whatever, and then they're painted on the back with this sort of fluorescent glow. So that was a huge thing for me, that the painting could talk about the wall and not be on the wall, or the painting could claim that space behind itself with color. So, and plus it was a way to stop people from framing paintings. Because if you put color around it, it's already framed, so you don't have to frame it. So that's where it started, with the background color. What, and it started as a commentary on what's going on the front, yes. You know. Yeah. And you have two paintings next to each other, right, on a wall, and one has a glow and one doesn't. So it's sort of like the baby Jesus has a halo, and someone else in the painting doesn't. So all that stuff comes into it as well. With the freestanding paintings, or the sculptural paintings, I'm really sort of, like, crazy about decoration. Like, I think that domestic sort of sense of decoration is really important to me.
Well, that plays into the whole component. It's another component of the history of paint.
Right.
In relation not only to the painting itself, but to what the painting was placed on.
Right.
So let's talk about the frame. Like, you were putting the color on, so that there wasn't an issue of frame, but you also have recently indicated to me you're interested in these very ornate frames.
Mm-hmm.
So, in terms of the future, is this something you think about, you know, just investigating more for yourself?
Well, I mean, the two large paintings that you saw, this large pink one that's going to be in the ICA show, and the large blue one that are in the hallway, those are the first paintings that have actual frames on them, and one of them is playing with the idea of wood, and the other one is playing with the idea of density around it. It's like this really dense Japan color painted around it. So, but they're really modern frames, you know. And for me, it was this notion of putting the painting inside something, like putting the painting in a container. And that's kind of what those like sort of Beaux-Arts frames do. They feel like a real container for the picture. And I find that really interesting. Like the painting is this hermetically sealed thing, almost like a life support system for the painting, you know. So those things they really do appeal to me. And that notion of framing and then painting the frames, like someone like Howard Hodgkin, where the painting becomes part of the frame, that really interests me. I haven't the foggiest idea how to do it though.
Yeah.
And I think that what I'm going to end up probably doing is buying like these cheesy frames and
just seeing what happens.
Because some of them are just, like, so hideous, but they're amazing. Yeah.
Well, you could also, in a way, sort of start constructing your own.
I think the hard thing about building is, like, I could spend a lot of time building it, mm-hmm. or I could get someone else to build it. And I have a wonderful carpenter that I work with on something. Some things I do myself, but things that are really precise, I work with him.
Yeah.
And he's terrific.
Yeah.
Because I just don't... If I was younger, I would take the time to develop that competence, but I'm not. So I just, someone else has that competence and they understand how I work. I just take advantage of that. Because like learning, can you imagine me with a table saw?
It'd be amazing. I think it'd be pretty amazing.
Please. I'd be a nervous wreck.
So along those, you know, we're talking about what's coming up. Are there any regrets in your career as far as... you know, your progression on things you know wish you had done or wish you had done different? Or,
you know, I just think it's really hard to... my friend Ryan says that, like, you have all these potential futures, right? And when you settle on one, you have to take all the potential futures out behind the woodshed and shoot them. Because you just can't. You can't have everything. I never grew up with a notion that I can have everything. So, like I said, I regret very... little. I do regret, I should have had kids.
Yeah.
If I could have done it, if it was legal for me to adopt children when I was a kid, because I'm queer, so
yeah.
Queers can adopt children when I was, like, of childbearing age.
Yeah.
I have several children in my life that I enjoy thoroughly,
yeah.
But I should have been someone's father. I should have done that. And I do have a tinge of regret about that. But it's not anything that it's not the kind of regret where oh, I should have married Lucy Feldman.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't have that
exactly.
regret, no. But it was that was just, like, the way systems happened.
Yeah.
That's really... and, like, you know, there are other things. Like, there are people I should have been nicer to who I wasn't, you know. And people I should have been nastier to that I wasn't. Like, I have those kinds of regrets, too, but I think everybody has that.
Well, I think that also is something that sort of starts to work itself out the older you get, too.
Yeah, I think so.
And the best thing about getting older is not caring as much.
I think that, you know, I have a younger colleague who is about to embark on this this new job prospect. You know, and I said to him, you know, you have everything. You have your health, you have a partner to go through life with, and you have kids. And now you have this wonderful career opportunity. So, like, don't be like me. You know, I put all my eggs in one basket because I only had one basket. If this didn't work out, I didn't have a plan B.
Yeah.
You know, and I was perfectly content to work as a secretary and make paintings.
Yeah.
I got very, very fortunate that I found teaching. And I'm very sort of stupefied that people are interested in my work. Like, really, in all honesty, I was never the person who thought, everybody's going to want to buy these paintings. Like, I never thought that. And whenever Camilo calls me up and tells me somebody bought something, I'm like, that must be a really special person to want to live with this. Like, I really... It's completely amazing to me that people are interested. I'm shocked that I have a museum show. I'm shocked. I always wanted that to happen, but the fact that it did happen, I was like, really? It's been great.
Well, that's the thing, you know, I talk to my students about, and I'm sure you do too, is the idea that, you know, nothing happens unless you make something. And it's the desire to make...
It's true.
It's the desire to make something that really pushes you forward.
Right.
You know, it's like, there's no guarantees, but if you make, something's going
to
happen.
It's true. Everything that's happened to me has happened to me because of my work.
Yeah.
Like, my job, every job I got, every painting job I got, every teaching job I got, it was because of my work. I got a job teaching drawing because I was in a drawing show and someone saw my drawings and they offered me a teaching job. So, I mean, if it wasn't for the work, I would... And, you know, my work's taking me all over the world. Like, all over the planet. So, I mean, it's... Like I said...
It's a dream.
It really is. Absolutely. No one's more surprised than I am. Really, absolutely. But I certainly never expected it.
So, not to talk about dreams, but the idea... What is next after the show? So you're done with the work for your ICA show, correct?
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm a bit of a control freak. Like, you know, and I mean, you know this about me, that I'm not...
Well, we both are.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't really see a problem with it. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, shit gets done.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I knew that I had a lot of responsibilities at my job coming up. So I scheduled all my studio time, and I said to myself... I want the show painted before my second studio visit with Helen Molesworth. And that was like in January, I think. January, February. And I got it all done. And so now I can relax a little bit. And I still have the vicissitudes of teaching and all that sort of stuff going on. But the thing next, Greg, to be honest with you, I want to take a real vacation. Like a vacation where I'm not... Where I actually get to recharge. I've been an insomniac most of my life. I'm tired, you know, and I think I could use a break. And then I want to come back to the studio, and I've already started working on some sort of strange paintings about my relationship to modernism and race and stuff like that. So I'm sort of thinking about that. And I've already started that work. And I have some monotypes I want to make. And I have all the materials for that. So.
You gonna come down to Savannah and make those?
I'd love to come to Savannah and do anything. I just come to Savannah and babysit your kids.
You should come down to Savannah and just have a vacation.
You know, I mean, when I was down there, like I said, it was when we first met, and I was down there, and I would drive out to Tybee, and I just thought, you know, this is really, and it was cold.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like in the summer and full of people. It was just bitter cold, and I just remember sitting on the beach all by myself and thinking, you know, this is pretty wonderful. Yeah. So, I mean, I probably would go to the low country again on vacation.
That and, of course, nice. We need to plan the Italy trip.
Well, yeah, I would love to go to Italy. But, you know, I do want to go on a vacation where I don't have to do anything and I don't have to look at anything. And, because every time I've traveled, it's been to look at something.
Yeah.
Like when I went to Turkey to look at things. And
well, it'd be interesting to see how long you'd want to do it, not look at things or not be engaged.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've never not been engaged.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that's so strange. And I think that, you know, you just get, physically, you get tired after a while. And I'm not an old person by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm not young.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that that notion of actually recharging has become really, really important, especially since this is like a landmark in the work, this show. And I'm sort of, I mean, I hope people like it, but I really don't care. Like, I don't, it wouldn't have changed the work one iota. And I don't have very many people come into my studio and talk to me about my work. I'm not that kind of artist, you know? So the things that I make, I have absolute faith in the things that I make. I don't really, you know, it's like you get to a point and people say like, oh, you should come over for a studio visit. Like another artist. And I think, why would I go do a studio visit with you? You're a grown person. You were never my student. Like, if you want me to come over and see what's going on, and we can, like, hang out and, like, have a cup of coffee or something, I think that's great. But, like, a studio visit where I'm going to talk to you about, like, what you're doing, or, like...
And tell you what's potentially wrong with
it? Yeah, like, who the hell am I? Like, I'm just some guy, you know what I mean, who has the same job as you. Like, it's just... That seems sort of crazy.
Yeah.
But there are people like you and a couple of our friends that, like, we have this ongoing dialogue about art, which is different than having someone come over and do a studio visit. It's astounding to me. I'm like, why would you want me to do a studio visit?
Well, I always think if someone's working and someone's showing and someone's not asking for anything, then I don't see my place to do it. And usually for me, the people that are really asking aren't doing anything.
I get that feeling.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's... Like, I have no problem with people saying, like, you know so-and-so, can you introduce me?
Yeah.
Like, I have no problem with that. I think that that's the way the world works. Like, I know this curator. I can send them images of your work. Like, I can do that. Like, I have no problem with that. That's about my reputation and my relationships with
and your faith
people.
In the person you're dealing
with. Right, right,
with
right. So I have no problem with that. But, like, the notion that I'm going to go to someone's studio and be excited about their work and somehow that's going to make some difference. Like, it doesn't. It really, really doesn't. And the people who are interested, the artists in whom I'm interested, my relationship isn't through their studio. It's through the work that comes out of their studio. So I would never inflict myself on someone else's studio like that. With students, it's different because your students are your students forever, whether they know it or not. They're your students forever. And they're always like a little, like, the way I am with my teachers.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always a little bit in awe of them, which is a wonderful thing that, you know, there's this person who's formative in your development that you care what they think. You're not going to change what you do, but you care enough about them to share with them what's going on. So that's very, very different. I do very few studio visits. I go talk to friends about their work or we hang out in their studio, but oh, you need to use more blue in this painting, or I'm not convinced by that shape. Like, what? Are you serious? Like, it's crazy. You have a master's degree. Who the hell am I? Yeah.
Well, is there anything you want to wrap up with?
Well, I'm glad you came to Boston.
I'm very glad.
It's going to be such a good time, and, you know, if I could live in Savannah, I would move there. It'd be nice to be close to you and Angela and the kids. That would be nice, but I have a job here. It's fucking cold. I'm telling you, it's just so cold. It's unbearable.
But it's beautiful now, so let's just stay
in
the moment.
It's nice. It's nice. And we both took our allergy medication, so we're fine.
No sneezing now.
Yeah, so that's it.
I think we're done.